Peter! My eyes fly open in panic. Peter is waiting up by the tree, unsuspecting and off guard. Maybe Finnick has killed him already. No, I whisper. That wire was cut from a short distance away by the couriers. Finnick and Beatty and Peter, they can't know what's going on down here. They can only be wondering what has happened, why the wire has gone slack, or maybe even sprung back to the tree. This in itself can't be a signal to kill, can it? Surely this was just Joanna deciding the time had come to break with us, kill me, escape from the couriers, then bring Finnick into the fight as soon as possible. I don't know. I don't know. I only know that I must get back to Peter and keep him alive. It takes every ounce of will I have to push up into a sitting position and drag myself up the side of a tree to my feet. It's lucky I have something to hold on to because the jungle's tilting back and forth. Without any warning, I lean forward and vomit up the seafood feast, heaving until there can't possibly be an oyster left in my body. Trembling and slick with sweat, I assess my physical condition. As I lift up my damaged arm, blood sprays me in the face, and the world makes another alarming shift. I squeeze my eyes shut and cling to the tree until things steady a little. Then I take a few careful steps to a neighboring tree, pull off some moss, and without examining the wound further, tightly bandage my arm. Better, definitely better not to see it. Then I allow my hand to tentatively touch my head wound. There's a huge lump, but not too much blood. Obviously, I've got some internal damage, but I don't seem in danger of bleeding to death, at least not through my head. I dry my hands on moss and get a shaky grip on my bow with my damaged left arm, secure the notch of an arrow to the string, make my feet move up the slope. Peter, my dying wish, my promise, to keep him alive. My heart lifts a bit when I realize he must be alive because no cannon has fired. Maybe Joanna was acting alone, knowing Finnick would side with her once her intentions were clear. Although it's hard to guess what goes on between those two. I think of how he looked to her for confirmation before he'd agree to help set Beatty's trap. There's a much deeper alliance based on years of friendship, and who knows what else. Therefore, if Joanna has turned on me, I should no longer trust Finnick. I reach this conclusion only seconds before I hear someone running down the slope toward me. Neither Peter nor Beatty could move at this pace. I duck behind a curtain of vines, concealing myself just in time. Finnick flies by me, his skin shadowy with medicine, leaping through the undergrowth like a deer. He soon reaches the site of my attack, must see the blood. "Joanna! Katniss!" he calls. I stay put until he goes in the direction Joanna and the couriers took. I move as quickly as I can without sending the world into a whirl. My head throbs with the rapid beat of my heart. The insects, possibly excited by the smell of blood, have increased their clicking until it's a continuous roar in my ears. No, wait. Maybe my ears are actually ringing from the hit. Until the insects shut up, it will be impossible to tell. But when the insects go silent, the lightning will start. I have to move faster. I have to get to Peter. The boom of a cannon pulls me up short. Someone has died. I know that with everyone running around, armed and scared right now, it could be anyone. But whoever it is, I believe the death will trigger a kind of free-for-all out here in the night. People will kill first and wonder about their motives later. I force my legs into a run. Something snags my feet, and I sprawl out on the ground. I feel it wrapping around me, entwining me in sharp fibers. A net! This must be one of Finnick's fancy nets, positioned to trap me, and he must be nearby, trident in hand. I flail around for a moment, only working the web more tightly around me, and then I catch a glimpse of it in the moonlight. Confused, I lift my arm and see it's entangled in shimmering golden threads. It's not one of Finnick's nets at all, but Beatty's wire. I carefully rise to my feet and find I'm in a patch of the stuff that caught on a trunk on its way back to the lightning tree. Slowly I disengage myself from the wire, step out of its reach, and continue uphill. On the good side, I'm on the right path and have not been so disoriented by the head injury as to lose my sense of direction. On the bad side, the wire has reminded me of the oncoming lightning storm. I can still hear the insects, but are they starting to fade? I keep the loops of wire a few feet to my left as a guide as I run, but take great care not to touch them. If those insects are fading, and the first bolt is about to strike the tree, then all its power will come surging down that wire, and anyone in contact with it will die. The tree swims into view, its trunk festooned with gold. I slow down, try to move with some stealth, but I'm really just lucky to be upright. I look for a sign of the others. No one. No one is there. "Peter," I call softly. "Peter!" A soft moan answers me, and I whip around to find a figure lying higher up on the ground. "Beatty!" I exclaim. I hurry and kneel beside him. The moan must have been involuntary. He's not conscious, although I can see no wound except a gash below the crook of his elbow. I grab a nearby handful of moss and clumsily wrap it while I try to rouse him. "Beatty! Beatty, what's going on? Who cut you? Beatty!" I shake him in the way you should never shake an injured person, but I don't know what else to do. He moans again and briefly raises a hand to ward me off. This is when I notice he's holding a knife, one Peter was carrying earlier, I think, which is wrapped loosely in wire. Perplexed, I stand and lift the wire, confirming it's attached back at the tree. It takes me a moment to remember the second, much shorter strand that Beatty wound around a branch and left on the ground before he even began his design on the tree. I thought it had some electrical significance, had been set aside to be used later. But it never was, because there's probably a good 20-25 yards here. I squint hard up the hill and realize we're only a few paces from the force field. There's the telltale square, high up and to my right, just as it was this morning. What did Beatty do? Did he actually try to drive the knife into the force field the way Peter did by accident? And what's the deal with the wire? Was this his backup plan? If electrifying the water failed, did he mean to send the lightning bolt's energy into the force field? What would that do anyway? Nothing? A great deal? Fry us all? The force field must mostly be energy, too, I guess. The one in the training center was invisible. This one seems to somehow mirror the jungle. But I've seen it falter when Peter's knife struck it and when my arrows hit. The real world lies right behind it. My ears are not ringing. It was the insects, after all. I know that now, because they are dying out quickly, and I hear nothing but the jungle sounds. Beatty is useless. I can't rouse him. I can't save him. I don't know what he was trying to do with the knife and the wire, and he's incapable of explaining. The moss bandage on my arm is soaked, and there's no use fooling myself. I'm so lightheaded, I'll black out in a matter of minutes. I've got to get away from this tree and... Katniss! I hear his voice, though he's a far distance away. But what is he doing? Peter must have figured out that everyone is hunting us by now. Katniss! I can't protect him. I can't move fast or far, and my shooting abilities are questionable at best. I do the one thing I can to draw the attackers away from him and over to me. Peter! I scream out. Peter! I'm here! Peter! Yes, I will draw them in. Any in my vicinity, away from Peter and over to me, and the lightning tree that will soon be a weapon in and of itself. I'm here! I'm here. He won't make it. Not with that leg in the night. He will never make it in time. Peter! It's working. I can hear them coming. Two of them, crashing through the jungle. My knees start to give out, and I sink down next to Beatty, resting my weight on my heels. My bow and arrow lift into position. If I can take them out, will Peter survive the rest? Inobaria and Finnick reach the lightning tree. They can't see me, sitting above them on the slope, my skin camouflaged in ointment. I home in on Inobaria's neck. With any luck, when I kill her, Finnick will duck behind the tree for cover just as the lightning bolt strikes. And it will be any second. There's only a faint insect click here and there. I can kill them now. I can kill them both. Another cannon. Katniss! Peter's voice howls for me. But this time I don't answer. Beatty still breathes faintly beside me. He and I will soon die. Finnick and Inobaria will die. Peter is alive. Two cannons are sounded. Brutus, Joanna, Chaff. Two of them are already dead. That will leave Peter with only one tribute to kill, and that is the very best I can do. One enemy. 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 The word is tugging at a recent memory, pulling it into the present, the look on Haymitch's face. Katniss, when you're in the arena, the scowl, the misgiving. What? I hear my own voice tighten as I bristle at some unspoken accusation. You just remember who the enemy is, Haymitch says. That's all. Haymitch's last words of advice to me. Why would I need reminding? I have always known who the enemy is, who starves and tortures and kills us in the arena, who will soon kill everyone I love. My bow drops as his meaning registers. Yes, I know who the enemy is, and it's not Inobaria. I finally see Beatty's knife with clear eyes. My shaking hands slide the wire from its hilt, wind it around the arrow just above the feathers, and secure it with a knot picked up in training. I rise, turning to the force field, fully revealing myself but no longer caring, only caring about where I should direct my tip, where Beatty would have driven the knife if he had been able to choose. My bow tilts up at the wavering square. The flaw. What did he call it that day? The chink in the armor. I let the arrow fly. See it hit its mark and vanish, pulling the thread of gold behind it. My hair stands on end, and the lightning strikes the tree. A flash of white runs up the wire, and for just a moment, the dome bursts into a dazzling blue light. I'm thrown backward to the ground, body useless, paralyzed, eyes frozen wide, as feathery bits of matter rain down on me. I can't reach Peter. I can't even reach my pearl. My eyes strain to capture one last image of beauty to take with me. Right before the explosions begin, I find a star. Chapter 27. Everything seems to erupt at once. The earth explodes into showers of dirt and plant matter. Trees burst into flames. Even the sky fills with brightly colored blossoms of light. I can't think why the sky's being bombed until I realize the game makers are shooting off fireworks up there, while the real destruction occurs on the ground, just in case it's not enough fun watching the obliteration of the arena and the remaining tributes, or perhaps to illuminate our gory ends. Will they let anyone survive? Will there be a victor of the 75th Hunger Games? Maybe not. After all, what is this quarter quell? But what was it President Snow read from the card? A reminder to the rebels that even the strongest among them cannot overcome the power of the capital. Not even the strongest of the strong will triumph. Perhaps they never intended to have a victor in these games at all. Or perhaps my final act of rebellion forced their hand. I'm sorry, Peeta, I think. I'm sorry I couldn't save you. Save him? More likely, I stole his last chance at life, condemned him by destroying the force field. Maybe, if we had all played by the rules, they might have let him live. The hovercraft materializes above me without warning. If it was quiet and the mockingjay perched close at hand, I would have heard the jungle go silent and then the bird's call that precedes the appearance of the capital's aircraft. But my ears could never make out anything so delicate in this bombardment. The claw drops from the underside until it's directly overhead. The metal talons slide under me. I want to scream, run, smash my way out of it, but I'm frozen, helpless to do anything but fervently hope I'll die before I reach the shadowy figures awaiting me above. They have not spared my life to crown me victor, but to make my death as slow and public as possible. My worst fears are confirmed when the face that greets me inside the hovercraft belongs to Plutarch Heavensby, head game maker. What a mess I have made of his beautiful games, with the clever ticking clock and the field of victors. He will suffer for his failure, probably lose his life, but not before he sees me punished. His hand reaches for me, I think to strike me, but it does something worse. With his thumb and his forefinger, he slides my eyelids shut, sentencing me to the vulnerability of darkness. They can do anything to me now, and I will not even see it coming. My heart pounds so hard, the blood begins to stream from beneath my soaked moss bandage. My thoughts grow foggy. Possibly I can bleed to death before they can revive me after all. In my mind, I whisper a thank you to Joanna Mason for the excellent wound she inflicted as I black out. When I swim back into semi-consciousness, I can feel I'm lying on a padded table. There's the pinching sensation of tubes in my left arm. They are trying to keep me alive because if I slide quietly, privately into death, it will be a victory. I'm still largely unable to move, open my eyelids, raise my head, but my right arm has regained a little motion. It flops across my body, feeling like a flipper. No, something less animated, like a club. I have no real motor coordination, no proof that I even still have fingers, yet I manage to swing my arm around until I rip the tubes out. A beeping goes off, but I can't stay awake to find out who it will summon. The next time I surface, my hands are tied down to the table, the tubes back in my arm. I can open my eyes and lift my head slightly, though. I'm in a large room with low ceilings and a silvery light. There are two rows of beds facing each other. I can hear the breathing of what I assume are my fellow victors. Directly across from me, I see Beatty with about 10 different machines hooked up to him. Just let us die, I scream in my mind. I slam my head back hard on the table and go out again. When I finally, truly wake up, the restraints are gone. I raise my hand and find I have fingers that can move at my command again. I push myself to a sitting position and hold on to the padded table until the room settles into focus. My left arm is bandaged, but the tubes dangle off stands by the bed. I'm alone except for Beatty, who still lies in front of me, being sustained by his army of machines. Where are the others, then? Peeta, Finnick, Inobaria, and... One more, right? Either Joanna or Chaff or Brutus was still alive when the bombs began. I'm sure they'll want to make an example of us all. But where have they taken them? Moved them from hospital to prison? Peter, I whisper. I so wanted to protect him. I'm still resolved to. Since I have failed to keep him safe in life, I must find him, kill him now before the capital gets to choose the agonizing means of his death. I slide my legs off the table and look around for a weapon. There are a few syringes sealed in sterile plastic on a table near Beatty's bed. Perfect. All I need is air and a clear shot at one of his veins. I pause for a moment. Consider killing Beatty. But if I do, the monitors will start beeping and I'll be caught before I get to PETA. I make a silent promise to return and finish him off if I can. I'm naked except for a thin nightgown, so I slip the syringe under the bandage that covers the wound on my arm. There are no guards at the door. No doubt I'm miles beneath the training center or in some capital stronghold, and the possibility of my escape is non-existent. It doesn't matter. I'm not escaping, just finishing a job. I creep down a narrow hallway to a metal door that stands slightly ajar. Someone is behind it. I take out the syringe and grip it in my hand. Flattening myself against the wall, I listen to the voices inside.
Communications are down in 7, 10, and 12, but 11 has control of transportation now, so there's at least a hope of them getting some food out.
Plutarch Heavensby, I think, although I've only really spoken with him once. A hoarse voice asks a question.
No, I'm sorry, there's no way I can get you to 4, but I've given special orders for her retrieval if possible. It's the best I can do, Finnick.
Finnick? My mind struggles to make sense of the conversation, of the fact that it's taking place between Plutarch Heavensby and Finnick. Is he so near and dear to the capital that he'll be excused his crimes? Or did he really have no idea what Beatty intended? He croaks out something else, something heavy with despair.
Don't be stupid. That's the worst thing you could do. Get her killed for sure. As long as you're alive, they'll keep her alive for bait, says Haymitch.
Says Haymitch? I bang through the door and stumble into the room. Haymitch, Plutarch, and a very beaten-up Finnick sit around a table, laid with a meal no one is eating. Daylight streams in the curved windows, and in the distance I see the top of a forest of trees. We are flying.
"Done knocking yourself out, sweetheart?"
says Haymitch, the annoyance clear in his voice. But as I careen forward, he steps up and catches my wrists, steadying me. He looks at my hand.
So, it's you and a syringe against the Capitol? See, this is why no one lets you make the plans.
I stare at him uncomprehendingly.
Drop it.
I feel the pressure increase on my right wrist until my hand is forced to open and I release the syringe. He settles me in a chair next to Finnick. Plutarch puts a bowl of broth in front of me, a roll. Slips a spoon into my hand.
Eat, he says in a much kinder voice than Haymitch used.
Haymitch sits directly in front of me.
Katniss, I'm going to explain what happened. I don't want you to ask any questions until I'm through. Do you understand?
I nod numbly, and this is what he tells me. There was a plan to break us out of the arena from the moment the Quell was announced. The victor tributes, from 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and 11, had varying degrees of knowledge about it. Plutarch Heavensby has been, for several years, part of an undercover group aiming to overthrow the capital. He made sure the wire was among the weapons. Beatty was in charge of blowing a hole in the force field. The bread we received in the arena was code for the time of the rescue. The district where the bread originated indicated the day. 3. The number of rolls, the hour, 24. The hovercraft belongs to District 13. Bonnie and Twill,
the women I met in the woods from 8 were right about its existence and its defense capabilities. We are currently on a very roundabout journey to District 13. Meanwhile, most of the districts in Panem are in full-scale rebellion. Haymitch stops to see if I am following, or maybe he is done for the moment. It's an awful lot to take in, this elaborate plan in which I was a piece, just as I was meant to be a piece in the Hunger Games, used without consent, without knowledge. At least in the Hunger Games, I knew I was being played with. My supposed friends have been a lot more secretive.
You didn't tell me.
My voice is as ragged as Finnick's.
Neither you nor Peter were told. We couldn't risk it, says Plutarch. I was even worried you might mention my indiscretion with the watch during the games.
He pulls out his pocket watch and runs his thumb across the crystal, lighting up the Mockingjay.
Of course, when I showed you this, I was merely tipping you off about the arena. As a mentor, I thought it might be a first step toward gaining your trust. I never dreamed you'd be a tribute again.
I still don't understand why Peter and I weren't let in on the plan, I say.
Because once the force field blew, you'd be the first ones they'd try to capture, and the less you knew, the better, says Haymitch.
The first ones? Why?
I say, trying to hang on to the train of thought.
For the same reason the rest of us agreed to die to keep you alive, says Finnick.
No, Joanna tried to kill me, I say.
Joanna knocked you out to cut the tracker from your arm and led Brutus and Enobaria away from you, says Haymitch.
What?
My head aches so, and I want them to stop talking in circles.
I don't know what you're...
We had to save you because you're the Mockingjay, Katniss, says Plutarch. While you live, the revolution lives.
The bird, the pin, the song, the berries, the watch, the cracker, the dress that burst into flames. I am the Mockingjay. The one that survived despite the Capitol's plans. The symbol of the rebellion. It's what I suspected in the woods when I found Bonnie and Twill escaping, though I never really understood the magnitude. But then, I wasn't meant to understand. I think of Haymitch sneering at my plans to flee District 12, start my own uprising, even the very notion that District 13 could exist. Subterfuges and deceptions. And if he could do that, behind his mask of sarcasm and drunkenness, so convincingly and for so long, what else has he lied about?
I know what else.
Peter? I whisper, my heart sinking.
The others kept Peter alive because if he died, we knew there'd be no keeping you in an alliance, says Haymitch. And we couldn't risk leaving you unprotected.
His words are matter of fact, his expression unchanged, but he can't hide the tinge of gray that colors his face.
Where is Peter? I hiss at him. He was picked up by the Capitol along with Joanna and Enobaria, says Haymitch, and finally he has the decency to drop his gaze.
Technically, I am unarmed, but no one should ever underestimate the harm that fingernails can do, especially if the target is unprepared. I lunge across the table and rake mine down Haymitch's face, causing blood to flow and damage to one eye. Then we are both screaming terrible, terrible things at each other, and Finnick is trying to drag me out, and I know it's all Haymitch can do not to rip me apart, but I'm the Mockingjay. I'm the Mockingjay, and it's too hard keeping me alive as it is. Other hands help Finnick, and I'm back on my table, my body restrained, my wrists tied down, so I slam my head in fury again and again against the table. A needle pokes my arm, and my head hurts so badly I stop fighting and simply wail in a horrible, dying animal way until my voice gives out. The drug causes sedation, not sleep,
so I am trapped in fuzzy, dully aching misery for what seems like always. They reinsert their tubes and talk to me in soothing voices that never reach me. All I can think of is Peter, lying on a similar table somewhere, while they try to break him for information he doesn't even have.
Katniss, Katniss, I'm sorry.
Finnick's voice comes from the bed next to me and slips into my consciousness, perhaps because we're in the same kind of pain.
I wanted to go back for him and Joanna, but I couldn't move.
I don't answer. Finnick O'Dare's good intentions mean less than nothing.
It's better for him than Joanna. They'll figure out he doesn't know anything pretty fast. And they won't kill him if they think they can use him against you, says Finnick.
Like bait? I say to the ceiling. Like how they'll use Annie for bait, Finnick? I can hear him weeping, but I don't care. They probably won't even bother to question her. She's so far gone. Gone right off the deep end years ago in her games. There's a good chance I'm headed in the same direction. Maybe I'm already going crazy, and no one has the heart to tell me. I feel crazy enough.
I wish she was dead, he says. I wish they were all dead, and we were too. It would be best.
Well, there's no good response to that. I can hardly dispute it, since I was walking around with a syringe to kill Peter when I found him. Do I really want him dead? What I want is to have him back. But I'll never get him back now. Even if the rebel forces could somehow overthrow the capital, you can be sure President Snow's last act would be to cut Peter's throat. No, I will never get him back. So then dead is best. But will Peter know that, or will he keep fighting? He's so strong and such a good liar. Does he think he has a chance of surviving? Does he even care if he does? He wasn't planning on it anyway. He had already signed off on life. Maybe if he knows I was rescued, he's even happy, feels he fulfilled his mission to keep me alive. I think I hate him even more than I do Haymitch. I give up, stop speaking, responding, refuse food and water. They can pump whatever they want into my arm, but it takes more than that to keep a person going once she's lost the will to live. I even have a funny notion that if I do die, maybe Peter will be allowed to live, not as a free person, but as an Avox or something, waiting on the future tributes of District 12. Then maybe he could find some way to escape. My death could, in fact, still save him. If it can't, no matter. It's enough to die of spite. To punish Haymitch, who, of all the people in this rotting world, has turned Peter and me into pieces in his games. I trusted him. I put what was precious in Haymitch's hands, and he has betrayed me.
See, this is why no one lets you make the plans, he said.
That's true. No one in their right mind would let me make the plans, because I obviously can't tell a friend from an enemy. A lot of people come by to talk to me, but I make all their words sound like the clicking of the insects in the jungle, meaningless and distant, dangerous, but only if approached. Whenever the words start to become distinct, I moan until they give me more painkiller, and that fixes things right up. Until one time, I open my eyes and find someone I cannot block out looking down at me. Someone who will not plead or explain or think he can alter my design with entreaties, because he alone really knows how I operate.
Kale,
I whisper.
Hey, Catnip.
He reaches down and pushes a strand of hair out of my eyes. One side of his face has been burned fairly recently. His arm is in a sling, and I can see bandages under his miner's shirt.
What has happened to him? How is he even here?
Something very bad has happened back home. It is not so much a question of forgetting Peter as remembering the others. All it takes is one look at Gale, and they come surging into the present, demanding to be acknowledged.
Prim? I gasp.
She's alive, so is your mother. I got them out in time, he says.
They're not in District 12?
I ask. After the games, they sent in planes, dropped firebombs. He hesitates. Well, you know what happened to the Hob. I do know. I saw it go up. That old warehouse embedded with coal dust. The whole district's covered with the stuff. A new kind of horror begins to rise up inside me as I imagine firebombs hitting the seam.
They're not in District 12, I repeat, as if saying it will somehow fend off the truth.
Katniss, Gale says softly. I recognize that voice. It's the same one he uses to approach wounded animals before he delivers a death blow. I instinctively raise my hand to block his words, but he catches it and holds on tightly.
Don't,
I whisper. But Gale is not one to keep secrets from me. Katniss, there is no District 12. This is Carolyn McCormick. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Catching Fire by Suzanne Collins. This program was produced and directed by Robert Kessler, executive producer Cheryl Smith. Music by Robert Kessler. Text copyright 2009 by Suzanne Collins. Production copyright 2009, Scholastic Inc., all rights reserved.